everything. Did you remember to sleep? What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, because I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Welcome to Kick Art.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, New Zealand's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz. And make sure you check us out at kickarts.org.nz to find out what's happening in your area and how you can support us to stay on air. Tonight we have another stellar lineup of guests for you to enjoy, and to kick the show off we are playing tribute to the TV show Neighbours, who wrapped their final episode last week after over 31 years on air. Like Shortland Street, Neighbours was a starting ground for so many actors, and many Kiwi talent headed over the ditch for a role in the popular soap. So here's the theme song, written by the fabulous Tony Hatch and Jackie Trent. We've had a lovely long weekend last weekend, a busy week this weekend. By the time this goes to air, you would have opened your second show, Crazy Person, in the last matter of weeks. You're still smiling. You're still in pink. Not that our audience can see that. How are we going?
I didn't realise how cold council buildings can be as well.
Yeah.
It's fine in the middle of the afternoon, but man, you suddenly go about 8 o'clock, oh, it's a little bit cold, and then it just turns into an icebox.
But we're all ready?
Yeah, we're ready. The kids are getting there. It's definitely, you know, been a little bit of a mad, manic rush. And I think this is the thing for us arts practitioners, that hire venues, they're so different. Every venue has its own quirk, right? So, you know, because we've had to take in curtaining, we've had to take in lights, we've had to take in sound, working out where to put them in the best place when you can't hang and you can't put anything on the walls. And so it's all those little things that, you know, I feel really privileged that I have places that I can call almost home, like our good old Rose Centre, which where everything's there and you can kind of walk in and do it. And I kind of, I'm not envious of people that have their own buildings, because that comes with a whole heap of other stuff as well, doesn't it?
Sure,
but
it
at the same time, I am envious of people that have new buildings.
Yeah, it makes us appreciate those wonderful spaces where you do, you have your custodian of the building who looks after it and knows their way around. They might be a bit quirky sometimes with their theatre cat, but they do know their place, don't they?
Definitely. And just having someone actually, doesn't matter how quirky they are, just having someone on hand. When you have to ring with a lot of these council venues, like the one I'm in, and you have to ring to talk to someone, and sometimes that means being on hold for up to 25 minutes to get someone to speak to. If it's an emergency, well, 25 minutes is a very long time to be on hold.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as I say, by the time this goes to air, it's done and dusted. You'll have your feet up at home, taking a big sigh of relief, because that's it till the next thing.
Definitely, and the next thing's not till next term, so I've got a couple of weeks to breathe.
Fabulous. Well, while you were away, I got up to mischief and had lots of wonderful interviews with fantastic people. It's a great week. Shall we kick into it?
I can't wait. Let's kick her off.
Well, it's hard to believe that the year is whizzing by so fast that we are talking about things to catch up with over these July school holidays. And tonight we are delighted to be joined by Tim Bray Theatre Company to chat about Bad Jelly the Witch. And welcome to the show, George, Tim and Tom.
Yay!
I love a media release that starts with stinky poo, knickers, knickers, knickers. I mean, the day I'm having, that's probably a really good start to the day. Welcome to the show, guys. So, George or Tim, kick us off first of all. Tell us, for our audiences, if they haven't caught Bad Jelly before, what is it all about?
Oh, wow. It's a story as old as time. Two young children go on out. They're ready to get some fresh milk from their cow. And lo and behold, the cow is gone. So they set off on an epic adventure to try and find Lucy the cow. It's full of talking goblins, birds, trees, and witches. Giants, worms, all sorts can be found at Bad Jelly the Witch.
What a great intro. And dare I ask then, George, what is your role in this?
Well, I am an actor, so I will be playing the roles of I sort of open the show as a narrator and then sort of merge into the rest of the cast as Mudwiggle the Worm, who's going to be sounding a bit more like this, really, on the night, and Dullboot the Giant. Yes.
Brilliant. And Tim, tell us, you're bringing such a classic story to life. Have you added your own sort of swing to it or slant to it?
Well, Tim Bray, back in 2010, got the rights to actually take it and adapt it for stage. And he's done it three times in 2010 and 2016 and 2018 and got huge reviews, big raves. And it's the same show, but every time the show is done, you get a different cast of actors who bring their own thing to it. And I'm loving the rehearsal period. It's a delight. Everyone is wonderful and amazing and very, very funny.
That's cool. And we need humour. It's a strange old time, so we need to bring some humour to everyone's life. And what role do you play, Tim?
Oh, I do a range. There's a kind of swap around roles. So, for instance, Kat will play Daddy and I play Mummy. And I've got the most gorgeous high heels. Just haven't painted my toes yet.
Still time.
There's plenty of time. I play an apple tree called Constable Nigel, who sounds a bit like stones. And I also play Bad Jelly.
Brilliant. Don't keep you out of mischief.
A lovely witch who loves
the baddest, the baddest witch in all the world.
In all the world.
And, George, why do you think this story has stood the test of time so well?
I would say because this story is so outrageous that it transcends time. It's one of the main things. And it's about simple things that youth often understands. And it's just so very funny and humorous. Basic things like, oh no, we're on a mountain, and what do you know, it's really cold out here, but look, this old woman's offering us warmth, so why wouldn't we get in her nice sack?
And of course it's Spike Milligan, so it's the Goons, but
yeah,
Tim Bray has also adapted a very Monty Python-esque thing going with it as well. So it's got all that craziness of Monty Python and the Goon Show all combined into one.
Fantastic. Now, Tom, you are joining the cast from Unitech, if I'm right. You're on your final year acting at Unitech. What's it like to jump into such a crazy thing as a Spike Milligan show?
It's been nuts.
Did Unitech prepare you for this moment?
Yes. Well, no. Yes, but no. I wasn't expecting it to be this crazy. But it's been an absolute joy working with these professional actors because they're so welcoming to us and really brought us in and taught us. Just watching them work is amazing. Watching them go through it is incredible because they just go. And especially from a person going into the industry, it's so cool to see those actors take off. But the show is incredible. Like the way that Tim directs, and he knows exactly what he wants, but he's got that. He lets us go crazy with it within our own ideas and stuff, which is really brilliant. Yeah, lucky to have such brilliant professional actors to be working alongside them. Yeah.
And how important is it to you as a student to have these real life opportunities?
Yeah, it's really important. I think without it, you'd get different expectations of what it is like to work in the industry, and you think that you're not really going to have to work hard for that, but it is work because we're members of the chorus, but we're also alternating the principal cast's their roles as well. So it's to learn all of those lines and to on top of your own is just that they haven't made it easy for us, but it's so rewarding. It will be so rewarding to go into that show season with that.
I tell you, I wouldn't envy the Unitech students at all. They've got a hell of a job to do. Tim Bray's had to work really hard to basically block everything, including the alternates, so that because it's highly likely in this COVID environment that, you know, there will be mandatory swap outs in case, you know, anyone living with someone who gets COVID has to drop out for a week.
Yep, absolutely. Totally agree. You're talking to someone who just directed the show and put understudies for their understudies of understudies in the end.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So these guys are doing a sterling job. They're really knocking it out of the park, paying attention and just really rising to the challenge. Yeah.
That's awesome. And George, while we're on you, tell us a little bit about your own journey in the arts. Where did it all begin for you?
Through the mists of time.
Yes.
I think it first started when I was about six, and I was, at the time, my family had sold everything and bought a boat. And we were traveling around the world, visiting all these countries for about 2.5 years. And so halfway into that, we were in New York, it docked up, and they'd left to do some shopping, and I climbed up onto the boom to have a read, as one was wont to do. And I started, you know, chatting to passerbys, and before I knew it, I had a full-fledged audience around me listening to my life story, 6-year-old trotting the globe. And when the parents inevitably returned, the crowd had grown really large, and this lady turned around to her and said, "Oh, you must be Mom. Oh, we know all about you. We've heard everything." And that's sort of when I sort of went, "Oh, I'm kind of good at this." And from then, the usual high school productions, training, getting out there, doing your own stuff. And I absolutely love the freedom of expression that it gives me. Yeah.
Brilliant. And how long have you been involved with Tim Bray?
With Tim Bray, I'm actually a newbie. This is my first show with Tim Bray, and he is fantastic. I love his process. He's incredibly efficient when it comes to the blocking and spacing. And you really have to give it your all and make the offers as fast as you can. You can't hold back with it, because otherwise you blink and, hey, show week, get on stage.
Yeah.
But it's really cool. It means you don't get bored. you just power through, and before you know it, you've got the kids in the audience. Hopefully. I mean, let's hope someone comes.
look, everyone's piling back out. You know, we've had a week reviewing a number of shows, and it was great to see full houses everywhere we go. It's suddenly, everyone's back. Everyone's back supporting the arts. Yeah. It's fantastic. And Tim, take us back in your journey into the arts. And I should say this is Tim Raby, not Tim Bray. Tell us, When did it start for you?
Oh, gosh. When I was about 14, my parents took me to an amateur dramatic show, and I didn't want to do acting. I wanted to do props. So I got involved with the Amateur Dramatic Society, Titirangi Theatre.
Brilliant.
And I did props for one show, and then a director turned around and said, "Will you do a Shakespeare?" And so he put me in a white wedding gown, and I played the role of Thisbe as an actor, and I'd never done it before. And I fell in love with it. And I still love doing props, but acting was it, and that was way, way back. I won't say how far back. And then about the same time, I met Tim Bray Theatre Company about 1990, 1991. I was also, you know, just doing TV, film, as well as his stage work and other stage work, and that's been my joy for my life, and I've been lucky to be able to do it.
Nice. Is there a genre that you prefer more, you know?
Oh, that's a tricky one. I do have two favourites. I do prefer stage. Yeah. I love TV and film, but there's something about stage that I get a lot more out of as a performer, instead of turning up on the set and you're just doing the end part. You don't have the process of rehearsal and growing and really developing a character. You've just got to create it for that moment on set. But with theatre, you can actually really enjoy that whole process. And children's shows, especially with low decile schools coming to the audience, is just mind-blowing. Mm. And it's the most beautiful experience. And I also love doing Shakespeare. So those are my two favourites.
Wow. Mm. Nice.
Shakespearean theatre is up there for me as well. It's an absolutely beautiful and rich language that you can just lose yourself in. Yeah.
Brilliant. Now, Tom, what was the catalyst that started your arts journey that then has made you go and study?
There are many points, I think, but there's a specific... So I went to go see a production of Macbeth. It was an outdoor performance. I can't remember exactly where or when, but I remember it was the... it was the interval, and so Banquo had just been killed, essentially. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go bathroom. And As I'm walking towards the bathroom, the actor playing Banquo comes past and drenched in blood. Drenched. Fully just, and flicks me a wink. And so I'm like, yeah, I want to do that.
Nice.
Do that. And so I say that's the story. So gone on to see where it goes. Yeah.
Long-term goal, where do you see yourself in sort of 5 or 10 years' time? Where do you want to be?
Don't know. Hopefully still doing it because I really, really love it. Whether it's acting or whether it's doing teaching or whether it's directing or what have you, whatever it is, something along those lines in theatre and film. Because it's a very special to create stories and bring them to life. I think the world needs more of those.
Absolutely. Tim, what advice would you give a uni tech student in their start or end of their study journey?
Passion. Enjoy it. Because that's the reason why you're getting involved in it, really, I think, in the first place. And no matter what happens throughout your career, it may start to become to seem like a job or whatever like that. Go back to the passion. Mm. Go back to the original joy and passion of why you're doing it. Whether you get paid for it or not, just go with that passion and that joy. That's what it's about.
Great advice. Now, George, if you were a fly on the wall as the audience left your show, what are you hoping you hear them say about it? How will you know if you've hit the mark?
I love the bit when the trousers fell down, Mummy. I think that was really funny. I want to go see lots more theatre like this. I think that this is the best show in all the world. I love theatre. Wow.
Love it. And best line in there is, I want to go and see more and look at Worked for Tom, seeing the blood-drenched actor.
Yeah.
Hopefully no blood in Bad Jelly the Witch, perhaps.
No.
Now, you've got quite a season, so it's on at the Pump House Theatre from the 2nd to the 23rd of July before heading to the Mangere Arts Centre from the 26th to the 30th of July. So it's part of the school holidays and beyond. Tickets are available from timbray.org.nz. Our kickarts.org.nz will have all the links and information so people can get along and book and support. We wish you a fabulous season. Go well. Have fun playing all these amazing characters that sound larger than life in more ways than one. Have an awesome season, and thanks for coming and chatting with us tonight.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Now, at Kick Arts, we're delighted to get regular media releases from different things that are happening all around the country, but this one really caught my eye. There is so many things in here that I want to unpack that a 15-minute interview is going to be a challenge. So we're going to see how we go. I am delighted to be joined by Caleb and Abby from the Atomeras Dance Company, who are here to chat about Kaha Triple Boost, which is taking place at the Q Theatre Loft from the 7th of July. Kia ora and welcome to the show, team.
Kia ora. Thank you for having us. We're excited to be here.
I'm excited too. I mean, there's no question your shows are always outstanding and next level. But, you know, reading that you've created a lot of this on Zoom and you're coming together and it's sort of your first moment back in the theatre space must be feeling pretty special.
Yes, I think it was, we were in maybe our first week of rehearsal for Kaha Triple Boost, which is about 2 weeks ago, and we realised it was exactly a year ago when we were in the theatre last.
Yeah, wow. Last big show was a year ago that day. We're like, wow, let's get back on the stage again.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So look, let's unpack first of all the show itself. So tell us a little bit about Kaha Triple Boost and what will audiences be in for?
So Kaha Triple Boost is a lot of kaupapa packed into one show. So the first first part of Kaha Triple Boost is a VR film. It's called Tomo VR. It's a stage show, Tomo, that is being transformed into the VR world. Tomo was originally performed in 2019, and it unfortunately did not get to be toured nationally because of COVID. So they asked me to wanted to venture out and do something different, and so they have ventured into the world of VR, and it's awesome. It's choreographed and co-edited by Gabriel Thomas with VR filmmaker Ed Davis.
Just to clarify, are we coming on and putting headsets on? And
yes.
Oh my goodness, crazy. How cool is that?
Yes.
The filming that they did and how they got the shots, like, we've seen a couple of the videos whilst in rehearsal process, and like,
so amazing. We were both there for the filming. Kayla was assistant production manager, and I was one of the dancers in Tomo, and yeah, we got to see a little bit
sneak peek,
but we're really excited to see the full thing. So Tomo VR is kind of the prelude to Kaha. So Tomo VR will be in Q Theatre Vault just before the show. There's two screenings, and then the second part of Kaha is a solo performance by Sean McDonald. The choreographer is performing it. It's called Still. And he's working with lots of different ideas, a little bit of voice, which is going to be really interesting. We just saw his first showing last week, and it's looking amazing. It was just the first showing, but so we're excited.
Sean McDonald is always amazing.
Yes, Sean can never go wrong. He just walks on stage, and we're amazed. Yeah. So we're really excited. And then the last part of Kaha Triple Boost, the Triple Boost part, is Kaha, which is 5 short premiere works by emerging Māori choreographers. So Caleb and I are both choreographing in Kaha, as well as 3 other choreographers, which are Dana Moore-Mudgeway, Ollie Matheson, and Sherritt Martin, as well as 2 collaborating dancers, Corey Tuale, Roy Croft, and Maddie Tumataroa. So lots of kaupapa in one show.
Yeah.
It's intense.
Lots of brains.
Yes.
Lots of brains on this work.
And it sounds like some variety too for the audience.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you know, certainly starting with VR and then going through to a solo. The works that you've created, is that with a larger dance company or number on stage?
Every work has all the choreographers plus the 2 dancers in them. So there's 7 of us in total. So there'll be about 6 in each piece. And then Sean's just by himself. And putting it all together is our 2 amazing assistant directors, Kelly Nash and Nancy Weijon. They're both bringing the whole thing together. So it's a nice cohesive work that audiences can be delighted with, and they can really see the ebbs and flows as each work transitions to the next.
But also having those people with such experience, it's nice having them in the room, because you just feel safer.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely. What's it like choreographing and being choreographed? Because, you know, when you say that you're all sort of in each other's work like that, do you sometimes sort of get halfway through a piece and go, oh, I really wish you'd take it this way? Or do you have such an open sort of environment that you can actually say that? Or do you have to zip the lip and go with the flow?
Yeah.
I mean, for me personally, I thought it was going to be really difficult because we'll be doing 2 different co-puppers every single day. And, like, let's say I was choreographing in the morning on my select group of dancers, and then Abby would be choreographing in the afternoon. And I thought that the switch of worlds and ideas for each work would be hard to access as a dancer and choreographer. But it's been surprisingly easy. We've had a long time working on these, like, for myself, Ollie and Dana. We've been working on our ideas late last year, just on each other. So we've already had a kind of idea of the direction we wanted to go. And Abby and Sherix was working on theirs. When was it? Like, beginning of this year?
Yeah, earlier this year, kind of. But all the choreographic ideas that are in Kaha were pre-developed throughout two different times with two different groups online.
Yeah.
So kind of really utilizing lockdowns.
Zoom was our best friend.
Yes, we loved Zoom. So Ollie, Caleb and Dana, as Caleb has said, were developing their ideas last year, and then Shirik and I got our chance to develop our ideas this year. So we already came with an idea of what we wanted to see. We also had a great week-long wananga where we got to try a little bit more ideas with a bigger group and in person, since we had only really done online. So this kaupapa has been born out of lockdown and has transitioned to in-person space, and then will transition into the theatre, which is a really nice progression, which is something that is, I think, helped us a lot navigating all the works, since it is a lot of kaupapa and a lot of decisions being constantly made, constantly changed. Having that lead in is really great. Both when we were developing online, everyone did an online exhibition on our, the Artemeta Instagram. Yeah. So
nice.
Also those resources as well that we can go back to and go, oh, yes, I was working on that.
Yeah.
I imagine it was pretty special sort of finally coming together in person. I mean, I have a daughter, a teenage 16-year-old, who dances 6 days a week. So as a parent who works from home in the corner, having to endure politely 5 hours of dance every night on Zoom and never ever get in the way as these things are flinging around the lounge room, I can only imagine what it was like for professionals having to do this in their space. I guess you've kicked the flatmates and partners out, cleared the room. What was it like to finally come back together?
I mean, it was nice just having space and being able to just eat up each other's energies again, because when you're on your own, there's only so much energy that you can give yourself. But when you're in a room full of collaborators, you're just like bouncing off each other the whole time, and it's just like a great vibe, and everyone wants to be on a good vibe whilst dancing, because that's when the best work happens, I guess.
And I think something that Artemeta does really well is make connections or connect people together, whether that be online or in person. But, you know, the most fulfilling connection is always going to be in person, and Artemeta really fosters that space for Tuakana and Taina artists and really creates an awesome space for ideas to grow, things to emerge, and have a really great time doing it, because, you know, these are quite pressurized situations and people get very stressed and are under a lot of pressure, and especially if you're making work for the first time that's going to be seen by lots of people. It's pretty intense, but the space has felt really secure and we've felt really held by the company, which is really awesome.
Brilliant. And it's been around a while. It knows its stuff, and there's some security in that. You know, there is that sense, I guess, of safety. They've been there, they've done that, they've experimented and they've succeeded. Caleb, take us back. When did the dance journey begin for you?
The dance journey began late for me. I first went to my first dance class at 17, and that was because I had my friend badger me, being like, I just see you as a dancer, like, you need to do it. And I was like, no, you've never seen me dance, no one's ever seen me dance. And then I did it and I fell in love with it, and I haven't stopped dancing since.
Wow. And 17 is late to start that journey.
And it was all my dance training was from like high school dance at Waitakere College out there in West Auckland. And, it was just a great environment. And then I had a few friends a year above me who then studied at Unitech, and then was like, you should just come over. And so then I hung out with them for a bit and was like, yep, this is what I want to do.
Nice.
This is it.
Literally called into it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant.
Fun. Yeah.
I mean, and Abby, where did it start for you?
Yeah, I'm probably the more classic version you hear. I started dancing at 5 years old, did the whole studio life, did jazz and hip-hop, and then I didn't really discover contemporary dance until quite late in high school, and then I'm from Christchurch originally, so I went to a great 1 year course called Hagley Dance Company, and I had some really amazing teachers there. One in particular, Fleur Deterre, she was a graduate of Unitech a number of years ago, and she really encouraged me to go to Unitech and pursue dance as a career. So I did. I like to listen to my teachers. And then Unitech was awesome. I never imagined myself as a company dancer. I always was like, no, I'm not going to do that. Being from, maybe that was my South Island, small town kind of thoughts and feelings. Yeah. And then I was really lucky enough to have the opportunity to second with Atameta in my last year of uni. So I got to make that connection while I was still training, and made a real connection with Jack Gray, our artistic director, as I was in his work in the secondment. And then ever since then, I've just been hanging out with Atameta, and I'm very grateful. I really love this space, and I really love the people. And so, yeah, I'm really invested in pursuing, you know, what Atameta can provide and what I can give back to them. I also do multiple roles for the company now, so I'm very invested. So I think my pathway of dance probably started very traditional, and then in a dance context. Or a westernized context, and then has become a little bit more grounded in this being away in Aotearoa, and how I can bring forth my own stories and my whakapapa and merge that with dance and create something really magical.
Brilliant. We have a lot of students that listen to Kick Arts of all ages. And I think of my own daughter who's, you know, really headstrong, focused on being a choreographer. What advice do you give young people wanting to make a career of this?
Oh, I think just be committed. Yeah. Like, if you want to go for it, really go for it, and like take your moment and take the time to really invest in whatever you want to, whatever path you want to do, whether that be choreography. Like, really think about what ideas excite you, or what is, and generally it's your first idea. Yeah. And that's normally the best one. And, you know, I think it's all about trial and error as well. You're not going to succeed all the time. Yeah. That's just normal. That's how life goes. That's like every other career, any career. Mm. There's going to be moments of this is hard, and then moments of this is amazing. Oh my God, best time of my life.
There's more amazing moments than hard moments. Yeah. Hard moments, they are.
They make you better.
Yeah.
So I would always say to people to really like just go for it. And if you're going to go for it, like really go for it and commit fully, be determined. And like bring your whole self forward. What about you, Kat?
I feel like one bit of advice that I got from a couple of friends a year above me at uni was like, it's not about how great of a dancer you are or how great of a choreographer you are. If you're a nice person and you're like, people like to be around you, you will get to be able to do things and go places, because it's not what you know, it's who you know and how you interact.
Totally. I think all the arts is about that, isn't it? Yeah. It's about the people far more than always the talent.
Yeah. Yes. That's the case.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So what do you want audiences, if you've got the hidden camera and microphone in the queue bar after the show, what do you want to hear them say about Carhartt Triple Boost? How will you know if you've hit the mark?
Oh, I think something that I'd love to hear is that someone connected with something, whether that be movement that they've seen and it brought out an emotion, or maybe they really connected with a kaupapa. I think, you know, that continuous line of connection is really important to me. So, you know, I'd love to hear someone say, oh my gosh, your piece, I really connected. I felt something, whatever that is, because I think dance is very open to interpretation.
Yeah, it's very personal.
Yes, and I I definitely feel that when I see my parents after shows and I go, what do you think that was about? And they're like, I don't know. I'm like, cool. Whatever you think it is, that's what it was. Your interpretation, that's great. That's
perfect.
So I'm not looking for people to get the work or get the kaupapa or really know what it was about.
Yeah.
But if something came up for them, I'm happy.
Yeah, I feel like I want them to want to know what it's about. Like if they left the theatre questioning the works, that means that they're wanting to find an answer for the questions that they're asking. So then they'll do further research or whatnot. So as long as they're questioning what we put on stage, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm going to conclude with one of our kick arts questions. And Caleb, I'm going to throw it to you. Oh. If Creative New Zealand handed you a blank check and said, do something with this in the dance world, what's the dream project if funding wasn't a question? And I'm curious to ask someone who joined dance so late in that journey, what would you spend the money on?
I mean, if I got to make a work and I got an X amount of money granted to me, I would love to make a musical theatre work.
Jack Gray would love that. He would be all in.
I want loud, full everything, so loud, colours, lights, set, props, choreography, singing, the whole shebang.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that speaks a lot, I think, about how, you know, you're always kind of limited in the arts and, you know, your wildest imagination. You're like, I want everything.
Swinging on trapeze.
Yeah, like everything you want.
Full ensemble.
Yeah.
Oh, it'll be a great work. CNZ, fund me.
Brilliant. You heard it first on Kick Arts. Hey, we wish you every success with Kaha Triple Boost. It is playing at the Q Theatre 7th, 8th and 9th of July. Head to qtheatre.co.nz. Make sure you book for Tomo VR as well so you get the full experience. We wish you an awesome, awesome season with live audience cheering you on. Yes. None of this Zoom business.
Yeah.
No. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Go well, team. Now, adding some variety to tonight's Kick Arts show, chatting, dance, theatre, and now music, we are delighted to welcome Banjo Patterson here from Psycho Wolf to talk about their debut track, Ghosts. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Stephen.
Now, look, I have to say it from the outset, you've got a pretty famous name.
Yeah, it's actually my name is a middle name. It's my middle name and clearly named after the poet. But when I was in Australia for 4 years, it's surprisingly unknown.
Really?
Yeah, despite him being on the $10 note. Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Well, look, when it popped up on my Zoom screen tonight, I was like, who's going to be behind this camera when it comes to life? Awesome. So, look, tell us all about Psycho Wolf. When did this group form together?
So, Psycho Wolf is it was going to be a solo project for myself, but not only did I realise how boring that would be and, you know, nobody wants to listen to it. Nobody wants a solo project and nobody wants the stress of that and it's just not fun. So, I started working with, I've been working with Aiden. He's my, you know, creative partner, and we've been working together for about 8 years in a band called Black Alpine, and we wanted to branch out, and we started working on a track or two, and then we were doing it. So we've been doing this project for about maybe 2 years, just as we were leaving Melbourne when COVID hit, and we were a bit more isolated, had less things we needed to do. We delved right into it.
Nice. And is New Zealand home?
Oh, New Zealand is home, yes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. We moved over there in 2017 with the band Black Alpine. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun, you know. But, yeah, we got homesick and returned.
Nice. And what's the goal now for Psycho Wolf? Is this one of many tracks that we're going to look forward to releasing on Kick Arts over the next little while?
Yeah, well, we've got one ready to go. We didn't want to do an album. We didn't want the idea of that. We wanted to do kind of, you know, each track will be, you know, could be completely different to the last being that we didn't want to focus on an album, having it all sound kind of more or less, you know, coherent, you know, which kind of wanted the creative control to do the, each project, each track individually. But one's ready to go. We've got quite a few more very nearly ready. It's just finding the time to get into the studio.
Nice. And where did this music journey begin for you? Take us right back. What was the catalyst that kicked it off?
Like music in general? Or this?
Yeah.
I think, so the first thing that really kind of, you know, triggered that whole thing almost embarrassingly is Green Day. I think I heard a lot of my, you know, when American Idiot came out, I was like, I would have been 11. And that was just, you know, the right thing at the right time. But it was also probably the soundtracks of the Tony Hawk games, weirdly enough. That was a huge thing for me. The movie School of Rock. So I would say those three things were the what the initial part was. And then from there, I got obsessed with Nirvana, and then that became like My Chemical Romance. Got really into metal for, I mean, I still love metal, but, you know, it's got its place for me. And, you know, so I got well and truly into that. And then, you know, I got back, when I joined Black Alpine, I really got back into the, you know, the old rock and roll stuff. But now it's more, like, that's everything. But, like, a bunch of stuff that my parents would listen to, again, I think not knowing it then, but definitely being aware of now, was a huge influence. So things like Talking Heads, you know, any like Led Zeppelin as well, obviously. and yeah, no, there's lots of that kind of stuff. Like my dad loves Al Green, you know, Fela Kuti, all that kind of, you know, there's an assortment there, you know?
That's a really good mix, sort of to put it all together. And now creating your own music, when did you sort of say, right, now I'm going to create my own stuff?
I'd always wanted to, I think, but it's easier to get distracted with, you know, one or two active bands and having many gigs, you know, like every other weekend is a gig, you get focused with that and you're having fun, so you don't care. And I wasn't writing too much of the music then, but when I was like, okay, I want to get into that again, you know, I want to do that more. And that would have been about maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I was involved with another band called White Devil Detroit over in Melbourne, which was, again, a lot of fun, but more of the same kind of, you know, hard rock sound. And I was getting a bit bored of the repetition of everything and all of that. And I still love it, but it's again, it's got its place for me. You know, like I wanted to branch out. So that was around that time. And I think a bunch of influences for that was mainly the Strokes, and all of their side projects they're involved in. Also Tame Impala, and just like, honestly, just getting like really exploring the last couple of years, just seeing what's out there now, you know, but my mind was a bit closed off to all that for a long time.
Yeah. Did COVID kind of help with that? A bit of a time to just sort of lock yourself in and listen and explore a bit more?
Yeah, it actually did. And I think, you know, I'm not saying I enjoyed COVID overall, but I don't approve of COVID, but it did do you know, a lot of good for me, even if it was just to get me to step back and breathe. And, you know, and I think the next song that we're releasing, actually, I wrote when Aidan and I were in quarantine coming back here.
Okay.
So, like, that was a good 2 weeks of being locked in a room with a, you know, little recording studio I had set up and a guitar. So,
had someone in the hotel room next door banging the door going, what the heck?
Well, no, because next door was Aidan. So he was the one banging around. Yeah, he was doing God knows what. So the thing about Aidan too is, and partially why I really enjoy working with him is because he is he's a producer and he runs Scallywag Records. He's got the same passion, you know, it's complimentary, you know, to myself, where I'll just write something rough and I'll be like, fix it, you know, make it sound better. Like the idea is there and he can fill in the gaps there. So he was doing his own thing in quarantine, and then yeah, I was just writing rough songs and then just going next door and going, hey, I made this, bounced it over to him and he would fix it.
Nice. Look, coming from Australia back to New Zealand, and I don't want to sound negative in this space, but you talked a lot about all the gigs. Now, my experience of Aussie is, yes, I mean, it's for a start, it's a bigger place and a bigger audience. How are you feeling about that shift back to New Zealand and perhaps a different gig space to what you had in Aussie?
Well, I think the main thing is because I was getting tired of the active gigs, I'm happy to step back from that for a bit.
Okay.
So Cycle Wolf, while as an active band and it consumes most of my creativity, my time, that I have spare, it's still like we're not looking to do gigs just yet. We're doing this a little bit backwards to how we had done it in the past of just writing songs, doing the rounds and then recording. We want to release music, then once we've got a set we are happy with, then get the rest, because we're a two-piece, we'll need the rest of the musicians to fill out those parts, and we'll do shows. A step back from that in that regard is fantastic, because there's no pressure to get back into it. There's no, there's still some fantastic shows going on here, which is, so I'm not, it's not like there's none of it. If it were any less common here, I think I would struggle, because even just going to shows, missing that, that feeling. But over in Australia, while there were a lot of shows, it was hard because it was so competitive. There's so many amazing bands there, but it's hard to try and get a grip on it. And I think Black Alpine struggled for a while there with that, because we were all out of our element and we didn't know anyone. And the other band that I joined, we were doing much bigger shows and, started to do little tours and stuff around like Sydney and all that. And that was a lot of fun, but it was so much bigger,
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you look for your inspiration when you're creating music? Where do you draw that from?
I don't think I'm smart enough to answer that question. I don't know. I think for me, it's totally, I can work away at stuff for a long time without, getting bored. And I'll just do that as for hours. And I don't think it might not be the most productive, but it's just gauging everything. And then later, I'll have, created these little shortcuts in my head of like how I can get things done. I mean, I guess that's just learning anything, to be honest. I think listening to music that is new and I haven't heard before, I love doing that, because you don't know, you might hate it, but there might be something in it that you might not enjoy the piece of music and go, that's not for me, but there's this one bit in there. It's just like, that's really cool. I like how they've done that. I've never heard that before in this context or whatever. And that could be enough to trigger an entire song just from hearing it. And it might sound nothing like that song. I don't pick up so much of the ideas or, the inspiration doesn't strike me so much from, like a lot of my musician friends will get it from books or, just reading and watching movies and stuff. I don't really watch movies. I don't get it from that. It's hard. Yeah, it's hard. I think just life in general.
Okay.
If I
pull it back to Ghosts, the track we're going to play shortly, what sparked that one?
Probably... a lot of Tame Impala at the time. Again, The Strokes. Julian Casablancas' other project, The Voids, was a big influence on that, because that was when I was learning about how synths work, and I still don't know how they work, don't get me wrong, but how they work in regard to a band and how you can have layers of synths and all that kind of stuff. And well, my interpretation of learning about that, I don't know. I still don't think I know anything about that, but it was fun. Then I started experimenting with that. I think I found, dug through some loops and stuff, and that was a lot of fun too. With the writing process of Ghosts was that we wrote that when we were still in Melbourne, and I think I'd done a bunch of like rough bits and pieces that kind of pieced together, and I'd done like maybe 3 or 4 guitar tracks to it that, some of them worked, some of them kind of had an idea. I think I did a bass and a bunch of random synths. It was probably all totally incoherent, but my ideas are there. I then sent it to Aiden, and he was like, cool, and he had the day off, and so later that day I had a different version of it sent back to me. I'm like, cool, and it's like a few of my guitar tracks were muted. He had added a few more, he'd fixed up some of the things I had gotten kind of right. He'd left in more than I would have thought, considering how different it sounded. And then I was like, cool. And I think I shuffled it over, rearranged the whole thing. He added one more bit to it, and then we were like, that's done. Like, we totally left it as it was for probably about a year and a half. And then, because we've got a bunch that were like, at that point, so it was just like, cool, next thing, and we didn't know what we were going to do vocally, because I hadn't done that before. I didn't know I wanted to do it, but I was getting pretty, A, tired of looking for a singer, and B, working with singers a lot of the time. I picked it up and kind of worked on it for a bit of time, and then I think I was working on some other tracks, and then this one we picked up again this year, start of the year, and I recorded it then. That was like, it was just a dormant piece of music for, nearly 2 years. And then I was like, oh, it's time for that. Finished it. And then, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Fantastic. It sounds like you've got a really good partnership with Aiden. How important is it, if we have a lot of young musicians listening to this show, how important is it to get that mix right, the person that you're going to work with?
It's vital. I was actually talking to someone about this last night. If you're trying to do everything yourself, like from my experience, it's going to get very hard, and you'll doubt yourself, and it's just every little thing will become much harder unless you know how to do everything. But then there's no time for that. There's no time in the world to be happy and working consistently, So I think I learned that maybe about a week after I decided I wanted to do it. I mean, Aiden's a different species entirely. He's like, he's insane when it comes to production. He can play like guitar amazingly. He can play bass on a different level. He can play drums somehow, which I didn't even know he could do until like 4 years into working together. And so having someone like that that's equally driven will constantly motivate you, in my experience. You will be the most motivated and productive if you are like constantly being not outdone, but matched. It's like, I've done this.
But I like the comment you made earlier where you gave him the track and then he sent it back with a whole lot of changes. That also takes, some humility to be someone who's created something and then said, okay, now play with it with full permission. Because some people can't do that. They it's their piece, they've worked on it. And we've interviewed people before who've really struggled with letting go. It sounds like you've got this perfect partnership where you can create something and not feel too precious or attached to it, to give it to someone you trust who's going to help make it better and bounce it back and forward till you both have a end point.
Yeah, well, you're 100% right. And I think I should probably be a little bit careful with what I say here, but we learned that process together on the same side of the coin, being that we were, in a band situation, and we both actually got to the point where we're like, oh, well, how about this riff? I've got the song I wrote, and for it to get shut down with seemingly no reason by certain people other than the point of they didn't write it. So then it becomes a bit of a dictatorship. That's not fun. That's not
And creative. It also stops your creativity. And the moment you stop your creativity, you're stuffed. You can't create anything good.
Yeah. And then you end up doing absolutely nothing. And that's, that's no good. So having the, you know, it's not even necessarily just the trust about it. It's knowing what you don't want in a, you know, creative team. You know, me and Aiden argue very little. Like, and if we're arguing, it's just like a, it's a back and forth once. And then it's like, okay, like, we'll see who's a bit more, like, you know, it's either, it ends in a trust me, or it's like, no, actually, like, here's this reason. And then the other one will be like, yep, okay. Like, you know, we're totally understanding of each other. We've both dealt with people that we, you know, the attitude was so, you know, I don't want to say, like, maybe toxic could be the right word, where it can be, make things difficult. And I don't mean that they're a toxic person, just that process can be very toxic. And it's hard having your ideas shut down. And then, or for example, shut down for one reason, and then that person's changed their mind about what reason they don't like about it, but there's something they don't like about it.
And perhaps it's just because they didn't create it and it's sounding too good.
Exactly. And they lose, they won't have credit for that. And they want the credit. And that's fine. It's not what we want to be. That's not what we want to be putting our focus towards. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Brilliant. And have you ever thought of creating any music to Banjo Patterson's poetry?
No. I haven't. I'm not saying no, I won't. Like, no, that's never occurred to me.
Right.
That is something I should totally do. Because, like, legally, I could probably just do that, right?
I think,
like,
you could. I think you could get away with it.
Yeah, just I have the rights to it, I think.
Someone will presume you're some long-lost relative.
Yeah, it could be. I did actually, when we were over there, a friend of mine had asked if I'd been out to Snowy River, out, I think it was not, it's, you know, out northwest of, northeast of Melbourne, I believe. I don't know. The guy was telling me it was from Bendigo, and I could barely understand a word he was saying even now. Still a great friend one. But we were actually going to go up to Snowy River, but I'm like, cool, maybe I'll see like a vision or something. I don't know.
Oh, could be a good photo opportunity one day for an album cover, though.
Oh, but now we've got to go so much further away. I'll just Photoshop myself in.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, look, I really love the track Ghosts. I'm delighted to play it here on Kick Arts Now. We look forward to seeing your albums develop. Make sure you stay in touch so that we can keep playing them as they get released. And we'll expect an invite to your gig. And right now I'm going to hand it over to you to introduce your own track here on Kick Arts.
Thank you. This is Psycho Wolf with the track Ghosts. Feels like I've been a star now. Steady.
Now, one group that was unable to meet us today but did send us their incredible album to be released this week is certainly worth us mentioning. It's called T-Bone. And the members of T-Bone are about as eclectic as the group's influences. There's a mandolin playing ex-chef from the far north, a fiddle playing wine importer from New Jersey, a Dublin-born spearfishing songwriter, a guitar-slinging lab assistant from Taranaki, and a gardening double bassist from Karori. Their debut album, titled Good and Greasy, is out now, 2 weeks prior to the band heading out on their North Island headline release tour. The six-date tour is set to be the perfect showcase of magic and energy that comes from these five exceptional musicians when they're on stage together. This brilliant album from five lads that make up T-Bone also manages to capture the raw energy of their live shows, a feature that the band have come to be known for. But the arrangements are tight and thoughtful, with space carved out to feature the singing of the fine folk music. Now, to find out more about them, their tour is running through until the 30th of July. Head to @T-Bone the Band on Linktree. That's @T-Bone the Band on Linktree. Here now is one of their tracks that we're going to play tonight, called T-Bone Rag. Enjoy. Now, now we are absolutely delighted, as always, to welcome back our favourite Rebecca into the Kick-Art studio with the wonderful organisation that both Emma and I toss coins over who is going to introduce, because we always muck this up. Is it improvernished, improvnished? Rebecca, what are you called?
Improvnished.
Brilliant. People will think I'm drinking on this Sunday night. Great to have you here, and welcome Frankie into the Zoom Kick Art studio tonight.
Thank you very much.
Now, Rebecca, kicking off, for those that aren't aware of your group, tell us a little bit about your organisation first, and then we'll unpack what mischief you've got coming up.
So Improvrished is an improvised theatre company that anybody can join. It's mainly young people, uni students and young professionals who are in the group. And we meet up regularly and we create new shows to put on that are all improvised. And we do lots of different kind of narrative ideas and different ways of storytelling, but improv is our main thing.
Nice. And what's the next gig we can look forward to?
Our latest show coming up is called It's Alive. And it's a new thing for us. We're combining science with improvisation.
Okay, does that need to come with a health and safety warning?
Oh, yeah. Well, the health and safety warning is that it's only half improvised this show, because the science we have practiced ahead of time, those parts of the show are scripted.
That could be quite fun though, you know, just have a science lab with a whole lot of chemicals and throughout the show anything can happen. I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
I did pitch that idea, but Rebecca shot me down.
Good that someone's got sense. So Frankie, let's bring you in here. You're director, creator, stage manager, everything. Where did this idea come from?
Last year, Rebecca and I were sitting in lockdown. We'd just finished teaching a Zoom workshop for 50 rangatira. We were teaching them improv over Zoom for Theatre Sports Youth Program. And we got to the end of the workshop and I said to Rebecca, wouldn't it be cool to make an improv show for kids? And she was like, I have no idea how you do that. And then we started talking about it. And then as my kind of brain got ahead of me, I was like, and then it's a science show and there's science experiments and then there's puppets. And she was like, oh, okay, that's a lot of elements in one show. So you want to have an improvised show with science experiments and puppets? And I said, yes. And then she said, okay.
Brilliant. And does it have some sort of structure or story that you're sort of guiding through? Like often, you know, improvised shows and yours, you're grabbing from the audience different ideas. How much of it's sort of that style versus actually, you know, you've got a beginning, middle and end, and what happens in the other bits is up to the audience?
It's got a format that I made up. So the improvisers know the format. And like Rebecca said to you before, because there's science experiments in the show and one of them does actually use real life chemicals that we have had to get a scientist to help us with, anything around that has been practiced, but that's just for safety reasons. Aside from that, the beauty of a kids show is how honest children are with their opinions. And I was just like, let's just see what they think. And you just, like a regular improv show, the story will be completely different every day because the kids will be completely different every day. But, it'll have a beginning and a middle and an end because we don't want to do it for more than 45 minutes.
We were talking about this the other day on a podcast about, you know, how do you end an improv show? And I remember once being in a theatre restaurant in Pairoa, at the Pairoa Racecourse, in fact, and this crowd, we had 200 people and they just wouldn't let the show finish. It just went on and on. And at midnight, we set the fire alarm off. It was the only way to end the show, because the more they drank, the more they expected from us. So, yeah, good on you for having an ending. And, Frankie, when did your passion or journey start in improv?
I think like most young Kiwi kids who are interested in drama but not quite good enough to be in the musical, it was theatre sports. Rebecca, actually, this is something we laugh about a lot these days. Rebecca was my theatre sports tutor at high school. I was a little year 7, and I think she was year 11.
I was year 11 student leader.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think that's where it began. I think this idea of, like, you could do drama, but it's a creative kind of kooky space where you're allowed to be a bit different, and the expectations of being anything other than enjoyable aren't there, which I really appreciated. So, yeah, that was where my journey a long, long time ago started.
And you both mentioned there about doing, you know, improv in schools and schools programs. Rebecca, are you seeing a little bit more of improv coming back into schools? Because it did go quiet for a while.
Yeah, I know when I started doing improv in year 9, I had never heard of it. And by like a wild coincidence, I saw Whose Line Is It Anyway on TV the first time, like the day before these posters appeared at my school advertising it. Yeah, but Frankie and I actually both teach for the school theatre sports program now. So I think maybe it had a lull and it's gotten revived. Lots of the people in Improverished actually have come through that school program. So I think there's a little bit of a quiet moment. Nice. And then now there's all this new improv talent coming up through the Rangatira Theatre.
That is fantastic. And what else have you been up to, Rebecca, since we last caught up, or what have you got coming up apart from this?
Well, of course, there's the rescheduled Fringe Festival. Well, not rescheduled, but the shifted Fringe Festival coming up August, September. So we've got another show cooking on the back burner for that one, ready to put on the front stovetop when this one is done its dash.
Cool. Yeah. That's awesome. And what do you want audiences to take away? So, Frankie, if you've got, you know, kids in your audience, you just said they're really honest. If there's a hidden camera and microphone in the foyer as they leave, what sort of things do you want to hear them say?
I just want them to have fun. I honestly think I just want them to go in and have 45 minutes of entertaining theatre, and they go to their parents like, oh, I'd like to go to another one of those.
Cool.
Because we're not really there to teach them anything. In fact, we in the next rehearsal, we have to do an actual science lesson so people don't say science words wrong. Yeah, I just want them to have fun. I literally just want them to have fun and be like, wow, theatre's really cool. I don't really mind. They don't know if show's being improvised. Yeah, I just want them to have fun. Hopefully the science community gets a few more young scientists out of this, but I don't foresee that an outcome.
Nice. Now, Rebecca, I think we may have talked about this before, or it may have been with our good friend Stephen Lyons, but, you know, how do you make it safe for an audience member who doesn't really want to join in, just wants to sit and watch and not feel, oh, my God, they're going to pick on me and I've got to call something out? They just actually want to sit and enjoy. Because you do get those people that get put off when we mention improv.
Yeah, you definitely do. I think it all comes down to, like, reading the audience. Like, I love in an improv show when, you know, the lights aren't, you know, the lighting situation between the audience and the stage is quite even. So you can see the audience, you can see who you're performing to. In this show, all of the cast, which is myself and Dylan Underwood and Isabella Kerich-Tim, we've all got a lot of experience performing for kids. So I think we all are used to reading in their faces, like, this kid is absolutely desperate to be involved, and this kid really they want to watch and not be spoken to. I think his experience really helps with that.
You almost need a, you know, when they come in the front door, take a red sign or a green sign. If you're holding the red sign, we're going to leave you alone. But, you know, quickly they learn it's not that scary too. You know, when they watch it done well and somebody has offered a suggestion or been involved in some way, they also quickly learn how cool it can be. So where can people find out more about It's Alive and book tickets and come and support you?
Oh, this is a fantastic question. So if you Google It's Alive NZ, you will find our Facebook event, our event finder. The show is on at the new Factory Theatre in Onehunga. This is actually only the second show that's ever been there, so that's pretty exciting. And there are tickets on iTicket. The show is coming up in just a week and a half. It's on the 9th and 10th of July. Very exciting.
Brilliant. Well, we wish you every success. I hope it goes well. I hope the science experiments do what they should do and nothing else, and that you have a fabulous audience supporting. Rebecca and Frankie, as always, thanks for coming in, popping in and checking in with Kick Arts.
Thanks so much, Stephen.
And that, of course, was the king himself, Elvis Presley, with Suspicious Minds. So why did I decide to play that? No, I wasn't being suspicious about what Stephen had been up to, but because you can now catch Elvis in a cinema near you.
Well, Emma, as you've heard, a beautiful mix of interviews this week. I wish our audience could watch the Zooms, because we had some real colourful characters this week that whose story and contents didn't always match the image that I had on Zoom, which I just love. And that's the arts world, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, it's always interesting how nervous sometimes a lot of these really experienced people get about coming onto the radio.
Well, and that Zoom, I think it's that whole thing I'm on camera, even though we say, hey, we're only taking the audio, but it's nice to talk to you. Yeah, there's something about staring at your face in the corner that really puts people off.
Yeah. I know, I appreciate that you were able to cover for me this week, Stephen, and that we were able to, as always, highlight arts in Aotearoa.
Absolutely. Now, to keep us doing this, we need your help. And we've had some beautiful sponsors the last few months. If you can help us out, head to our website at kickarts.org.nz. Sponsor a small amount or a lot. It all makes a difference as we have to cover our broadcasting fees. But we'd love a sponsor for the months to come. Take us through to Christmas. So if you've got some shows and events, we can give you lots of extra plugs if you're one of our sponsors. So please get in touch.
Definitely.
And of course, we dropped some new Kiwi music this week. We love receiving your tracks, your album releases. So don't forget, if you're in the arts landscape, music, whatever it is, of course, Smoke Free Rock Quest is in its regionals at the moment. Get in touch with us. Or mums and dads, if you've got talented students out there doing these things that might not really be keen on self-promoting, click us an email. info@kickarts.org.nz, because we would love to play music. Well, we do love playing music, and we would also love to promote new Kiwi artists.
So I hope that everyone has a fantastic last week of term for anyone in education. I know that there's a lot of arts educators out there looking forward to their 2 weeks of student non-contact time. I'm not going to say it's a holiday, because for most of them, they're actually in school most of those holidays rehearsing shows. So enjoy your last week of term, everyone, and we look forward to being back with you next week to
kick some arts.
Bye bye, we'll see you in a week. Don't forget to brush your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah 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 blah. Let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Good night from Kick Arts.
Hey, my name is Rob.